and welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm your host, Rebecca Christie, and I am joined today by two Bruegel scholars and Professor Herbert Brucker, joining us from Humboldt University in Berlin. Our Bruegel scholars are Nina Ruhr and Nina Vojanovic. They are co-writing a paper on migration from the Western Balkans into the EU, primarily into Germany. So we're going to be talking about that paper and what it finds and what it recommends, particularly for the Western Balkans. And then Professor Herbert Brucker is going to tell us about the climate in Germany right now, where on the one hand you have labor shortages and on the other hand you have a domestic political situation that is very uneasy with immigration. And so it's a very current topic. Just to get us started, Nina V, tell us what your paper is about and what you found.
Rebecca, thank you very much. So we're really investigating the economic implication on labor force from Western Balkans, which include six countries, to Germany. So these six countries are Albania, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Montenegro, Serbia, Kosovo, and North Macedonia. And we are interested in the labor flow of this region toward Germany because of various reasons. There has been historically strong ties between migrants from the Western Balkans to Germany. In fact, every fourth migrant from this region ends up in Germany. But more recently, and in particular as of 2015, there has been a period of migration marked by so-called Western Balkan regulation, which was enacted in German parliament in 2015. The reasoning behind this regulation was primarily stemming from the Syrian crisis. So there were many Syrians in 2015 in the Western Balkans seeking to reach Germany. So basically the primary reason was to separate regular from irregular migrants. But what turned out to be is that Western Balkan regulation all the way to today facilitates the migration from the Western Balkan to Germany across all the industries of Germany and irrespective of the qualifications, which makes this Western Balkan regulation very appealing migration policy internationally. So from 2015 until 2023, this Western Balkan regulation was turned into an indefinite, not temporary, but more indefinite policy. And the migration quotas were annually 25,000, meaning that 25,000 people from this region could get a work permit. And as of 2024, this quota doubled from 25,000 to 50,000, meaning that as of last year, 50,000 people from the region could get a work permit and work in various sectors of German economy. We wanted to know what has been happening during this horizon, during 10 period of time. What are the implications for Germany, but in particular for the Western Balkan economies? Why? Because we saw a huge rise in the number of migrants and employees from the region. In fact, from 2015, when the Western Balkan regulation was in place, until 2024, the number of migrants increased by 150%. So as of 2024, there are approximately 0.5 million people from the region working across various industries in Germany, which accounts roughly for 3% of the population of the Western Balkan region.
Wow, so 3% of the Western Balkans have left to find work just in Germany. Nina, what are some of the more interesting things that you found as you were combing through this data? Nina R.
Yeah, one of the most interesting findings is that we can clearly see that there's also a sectoral distribution. So there are a few sectors in Germany that have benefited more than others. So for example, the construction, the manufacturing or the healthcare sector where most Western Balkans are employed in. If, for example, we look just at the construction sector in 2024, citizens from the Western Balkans made up almost 4% of the entire German construction workforce, with people from Kosovo just representing 1.5% already. And this sector distribution also brings a gender with it, so that 62% of the Western Balkan citizens employed in Germany are men, which comes a bit indeed with the fact that there are more people employed in traditionally male-dominated sectors. Now, one other interesting fact that we find is that most people are actually medium-skilled workers. So these represent around 58%. And this is pretty interesting finding to highlight, especially that the Western Balkan regulation does not, you don't need any qualification necessarily, in the sense of, like, contrary to other labor migration regulations, this is one of them where your qualification recognition is not needed unless you want to work in a regulated profession.
Super interesting. Herbert, how does this play in Germany, where migration is such a hot button issue? Are migrants from the Western Balkans viewed differently from those from Turkey or Morocco or other places?
So we have had in Germany in the spring of 2015 and also in 2014 a relatively high asylum migration from the Western Balkans. And what the German government then decided is to tighten the rules for asylum seekers from the Western Balkans. They were declared as safe third countries and they only received cash benefits and stuff like that on the one hand. And on the other hand, and I was a proposal we have conducted also in our institute, we tried to open the borders for labor migration. Yeah. So the idea was to do something like an exchange of asylum seekers against labor migration. Yeah, because most of the asylum seekers from the West Balkan, about 95 or 98%, did not receive asylum at that time. And that worked out in one sense, but not in the other one. Although the people who came from the West Balkan that our surveys show are not those who came earlier as asylum seekers. Yeah, so that are two completely different groups. On the other hand, the labor supply from the West Balkan was extremely high. And in the beginning, we have had no ceiling for that, or no threshold level, no quota. And the German government was surprised by the huge demand for visas from the West Balkan. And we, our institute then was in charge of the evaluation of that rule, and we made a couple of surprising findings. The first one is we have had, as the study correctly states, no obligations for occupational qualifications and other qualifications. But between 50 and 60% of the population, our figures are not completely reliable here, have occupational degrees, perhaps even 70%. So it was a pretty large share. And about 55% up to 60% work in occupations or perform tasks which usually require vocational training. Yeah, so they were also able to transfer the human capital. So it's wrong to talk about the West Balkan people as not qualified labor force, as many politicians in Germany do. And that was the problem of the Western Balkan rule. There was a lot of political opposition against it, and that was your question. How was the mood against relative to that rule? The people were concerned, trade unions, but also policymakers, that a huge bunch of non-qualified workers came. And that was not true. We found that out in the evaluation. And the other big point about the rule is that you need, the visa is only valid if you work in Germany. Also you cannot rely on social assistance. And as a consequence of that, we see a better labor market integration of those people compared to any other migration group in Germany. About 98% of those who arrived, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, are still in work, and less than 2% receive social benefits. That is much, much better than the German population and much better than what we do see in terms of other groups. And as a consequence of our first evaluation, the threshold level was increased from this 25,000 to the 50,000. And then, if you correctly observe, the discussion about migrants becomes tougher and tougher in Germany. And as a result of that, we have now in the coalition agreement that the threshold level is again reduced to 25,000. And that's perhaps a question for the discussion, whether this plays a big role, because my understanding, but perhaps the authors of the studies know more than I do, about that. The migration potential from the West Balkan might be by and large already exhausted, because what we do see that less than 20,000 individuals acquired a visa, I think, in the last year or so, the last 2 years. So we were well below the 50,000 threshold level. That may have something to do also with our poor administration embassies in those countries. But another reason might be that the migration potential might be already exhausted, so that this 25,000 quota is not binding, or not it's not an effective constraint for migration. I'm not sure about that. That's an interesting point. My impression, I think the two important issues are, we don't see those people on social benefits. They work. Yeah, it's correct that we do see a very high share in the construction sector, where we need urgently workers in Germany. Yeah, and that their qualification level is very similar to that qualification level which we have for EU migrants from the new member states. That looks pretty similar. The salaries are slightly higher, so they do better than you might think if you consider the case that you have no skill obligations.
That is super interesting. I was really struck by your comment on occupational decrease. So people are taking jobs in Germany that require lower qualifications than the ones that they left behind in the Western Balkans. And also, of course, that 98% of them have stayed in work over the years. And you bring up a couple of areas that we want to talk about. I'm not sure in which order. We want to talk about, are there still people looking to come from the Western Balkans? And if so, does that risk draining all of the workforce out? And also the question of EU accession. All of these countries have talked to the EU about joining at one point or another. And you mentioned, Herbert, just now, at the time, new EU countries like Romania and Bulgaria. I mean, maybe we're just seeing this wave a little bit ahead if some of these countries, particularly some of them, are closer to accession than others. Nina V, what do you think? Pick one.
On your point, are there more people from the Western Balkans ready to come? And then we had Professor Herbert saying that maybe this market is saturated in terms of how much is actually willing to migrate away. It's really hard to assess, because what I realize, and I think my co-author Nina Ruhr, is that leaving sometimes is a matter of your own personal assessment. It's a matter of your own assessment of risks. And sometimes leaving is not related to economic factors or pertinent to institutional framework, which is very much deteriorating in the region. Sometimes it's just a matter of a personal decision. I mean, we are all migrants, and sometimes we move to another place because, for subjective reasons, we like it. But we do investigate what could be the reasons motivating these migrants to leave in the first place. And we looked into so-called push and pull factors. Pull factors could be, various economic phenomena in Germany, shaping German economy, which are very attractive and appealing for migrants to move. But then there are a lot of push factors which are negative outlook, economic and institutional outlook in this region, which are really demotivating, especially young people, to leave. So just to give you a slight taste of what exactly I'm talking about. So talking about youth, for instance, because that's the most important labor force, I would think also because we're talking about Generation Z that possesses certain skills, digital skills that are needed in times of digital transition. So the unemployment rate in the Western Balkans is, even though declining, is as high as 25% for the youth. So this is for people who are aging 15 to 24, but it's about 6% in Germany, for instance. In addition to that, this is on the top, the fact that, for instance, young people are more educated than elderly in this region. So despite their educational level outperforming the education level of the older generations, they still have difficult times finding a job. On top of that, there is a very high level of those who are inactive and still not being educated. And so they're not in training and not in education. So just to give you a certain figure, so for the Western Balkans, 20% of this labor force is neither in education nor in training. So there is a huge potential of people out there that is not used, for instance. But besides, you know, labor partition challenges, there are institutional challenges, as we all know, in the Western Balkans, which being unfortunately traditional, and there are systemic issues. For instance, low level of democracy, rule of law, corruption. In fact, there is one very recent study showing that on a scale from 0 to 10, which is a scale measuring the level of corruption, from 0 being not corrupt to 10 being very corrupted, if you increase the level of corruption by 1 unit, so from 1 to 10 by 1 unit, the level of out-migration can increase by 11% based on this study. So these countries actually score very high when it comes to corruption, and the situation is actually getting worse in some countries like Serbia, North Macedonia, and Bosnia and Herzegovina. And of course, that this is something aggravating that is leading to overall discontent. And to demonstrate to you that this problem is real, just look at, for instance, protests in Serbia that are ongoing for almost a year. They are ongoing for all of these reasons which I've just listed, topping up with, of course, deteriorating democracy. But even when you listen to these people protesting, you'll see that they are very dissatisfied in the labor market. So they often said, we want a system that values our knowledge and our work. And in the analysis also that Nina Royer and I did, we do find that a lot of systemic issues exist in the region which are motivating people to leave. For how long? I don't know. But these are certainly, you know, challenges that demand to be addressed. And of course, will not be easy.
No. Herbert, do you have any thoughts on that, on corruption specifically, in either direction of this?
But I think it's a big issue, and of course the wage differential is striking. On the other hand, we do see that a lot of people which are young have already emigrated, not only via the Western Balkan rule, but they have also used other channels. Yeah, that's also an important point. We look at the German statistics, we have also many migrants from the Western Balkans who came via other channels, and they perform in a different way and are selected in another way. And I wonder a bit whether those who are young and willing to migrate, whether most of those have already emigrated. And that is a thing we observe also in many, many other countries, that you have still huge wage differentials, huge differences in economic conditions, but after a while, the economic differences or the migration potential is exhausted. Yeah, we do see that where we have completely open borders within the European Union, we see, although we have in German, in the last year, we have a negative migration saldo with the countries, with the new member states of the European Union, simply because the emigration potential, the migration potential is exhausted. And I wonder whether the Western Balkan countries move into this direction. And I'm not sure about it. For me, it's a very important question. But what I do see is that visa applications do substantially have already declined. And we have also perhaps, I don't know whether we can call it corruption, but we have a lot of institutional problems with our embassies, with the German embassies working there. Then I've seen the very, very bad things. And perhaps they do not deliver appointments at the embassies, increase the bureaucracy, make their own voluntary policies which curb migration from the Western Balkans. That might be also the case, or that's an issue. So I have not the feeling. I'm not absolutely sure, but the aggregate figures demonstrate that the migration potential might decline. Perhaps if we improve the entry channels, institutional conditions, it might be a bit larger. But it may be also the case, yeah, let's say that the party is already over, that most of the people who wanted to migrate have already done so.
Nina Ruhr, do you have a view on the state of brain drain or backed up demand for migration?
Yeah, I mean, just I want to chip back to the question, and I'm not 100% sure it will necessarily stop. So for the many reasons Navi just mentioned before, just that these unresolved political challenges, I think they won, of course, they undermine national development, but they also cultivate a sense of frustration and exclusion that really reinforce the desire to emigrate. And as long as that won't stop. I think people will continue wanting to move away. And one important thing is also the diaspora community that has been created now in Germany. So it's getting larger and larger. And I think one thing what we have to keep in mind is that the more people will get there, they will also then, it will make it easier to find a job in Germany from the Western Balkans, right? So you have friends, you have neighbors, you have someone from your village, from your city that you know that went to Germany. And I think this will facilitate ways to immigrate. So I'm not 100% sure if it really will reduce. Then it might be indeed that the big bulk is over because the regulation allowed suddenly so many people to come. So it might just be that indeed a large number of people already have left, but I'm not so sure it will not stop just right now. And I think one thing is that indeed there will be other ways as well that they will join. So for example, earlier on through the university, through education, I think one important pull factor, and especially from Germany, is that there are more universities that are, let's say, better graded at an international level. And so students will come, and this will make it even easier for them to get a visa afterwards to work. They have already maybe internships, the employment relations. So it might be indeed that they will just join even earlier than they have been doing so far.
Ninavi?
Well, I would just like to chip on the comment that, you know, people might not leave anymore. And these countries, by the way, are not, I mean, they're emerging markets. They're not like poor countries. And they've been growing at a faster rate than the EU, Western EU member states, but just by nature of the economics. And if you actually look at the level of development, you will actually see that remittances, which are very important sources of consumption, and we also touched upon that in our study, are declining. So the share, the importance of the remittances in GDP is declining, not because the remittances are declining, the remittances are growing, but because these countries are growing too. But it's important also to highlight the context that we are investigating. All of these countries strive to get into the EU. All of these countries are EU candidate countries, but Kosovo. And let me look at the experience of Croatia, which is a very similar system. And also it's part of the region too, and it's a bordering country. When Croatia entered EU, for instance, it lost 10% of its population. So at the beginning of the podcast, I mentioned 3% of the population of the Western Balkans being only in Germany. Croatia lost 10% of its population, not only due to migration, there are also demographic issues, but migration was seriously playing one important role. And the figures are even more striking for Romania and Bulgaria. That being said, it's difficult. I mean, it's possible, but it's also difficult to argue that once these economies enter the EU, which is their strategic goal, and Montenegro and Albania are being discussed as potential future candidates until 2030, and once the borders fully open, not only to Germany, but to entire EU market, then it's possible, very likely, given the past experience, that migration may continue also for this reason.
The second half of our podcast, I want to talk more about these accession dynamics. Herbert, what's your sense of how a new wave of EU accession might work, particularly compared to the last round of new countries? Do you think that it might be less dramatic simply because the economies are already more integrated? Or do you think we really would see another big wave if we ever did get to full integration?
Perhaps. We go first a step back. Maybe for accession candidates, something like the Western Balkan rule, and that's the way how I try to frame it in the general public, is exactly the thing we need, because it basically does not postpone the free movement of labor until the later stages of the accession, or perhaps with transitional periods, as we have had that with the other Eastern European countries. But we liberalize the labor markets a bit in advance, and which goes then along with the liberalization of the other markets, the market for goods and services and capital markets. Yeah. So, and for me, that makes absolutely sense, in particular in the context that we need in the rich countries, in particular Germany, because of demographic reasons, more workers. Then we have, of course, to discuss the issue of a brain drain, whether it's at serious or whether there's a beneficial brain drain or whether the brain drain is serious damage to the economy. So that's my major concern. But from the receiving country perspective, so that would be a huge gain. Either for Germany, it works pretty well out. There are no bad spillovers for the welfare system. And it are exactly the workers we do need where we have labor shortages. Whether it's skilled labor or less skilled labor, they move into the niche of the labor market where we have shortages. So that's a win situation for Germany. It's a win situation for the workers who move. And the open question is, what is it doing to the sending countries? That's my perception. But that's something I would do in advance of complete integration. You ask me about further EU enlargement, I'm pretty skeptical. Not for economic reasons. Yeah, we could stand that. But we have talked about already about corruption. And I see a lot of political problems in the Western Balkan areas. And what we do see in the EU is already something like a gap or political split or division between the new member states and the old member states. It's not that easy, but there's a political gap and that will become even deeper. And if we talk about the different country from the Western Balkan, I see a huge political division. And what we do need in the European Union is a minimum kind of content based on certain values. And to be frank, I do not see that in the Western Balkan countries.
Let me ask all of you about the role of China in this conversation as a source of demand, of economic investment, of interest in the Western Balkans. Herbert, what do you think?
Maybe one or two observations. I think that's the major argument in terms of, for me, for the further Eastern enlargement. Because if you consider the big, large blocks in the world, then, of course, we have a geopolitical interest to integrate as much as we can to counteract the influences of China, which are increasing. Not only China, we are talking also about Russia in certain regions. And that is a strong political argument in favor. And the point that we have divisions in values, and I absolutely agree that we have very much to differentiate between individual Western Balkan countries, but that makes it not easy. Because then neighboring countries have huge conflicts. That is, I think, the major problem. But if we think that about it from the global perspective, we should integrate as much as possible. So the pragmatic solution might be integrating the market further and try to bind them as close as possible also politically, and then see what's going on. And perhaps it may help if you admit the front runners, which may more share our values than other countries, that may put some positive pressure on other countries. But I'm not too optimistic here.
Do you want to say anything about the influence of China in the Western Balkans and whether that affects pro-European views or any of these trends? Are there more jobs in the Western Balkans now?
This is a black box question, but let me just be clear. The biggest trade partner of the Western Balkans is the EU. The biggest investors in the Western Balkans are the EU investors, even in Serbia. That's why it's so difficult to actually pivot towards Russia or China for these countries. I mean, geographically looking, these countries are completely surrounded by the EU. They are completely dependent economically on the EU. I mean, 60% of Serbian export, which is the biggest economy of the region, is directed to EU. Serbia automotive sector is so tight with German automotive sector. I mean, when Germany goes down, Serbia, North Macedonia and Bosnia and Herzegovina are downgrading their GDP too. China influence political. It's through infrastructure projects that are a bit lucrative, and they're mostly pertinent to Serbia now, but less to other countries.
Yeah, Nina Ruhr.
I think one thing that I came across when working on this paper is that with the high investment of China into the region, and especially in construction, we actually see a bit more the skill shortages and the issue that out migration may have posed in the region. So in manufacturing, in construction, we can see that job vacancy rates go up. We can see that more and more companies are stating that they can't find the people with the correct skills. And so here, this is the only time when, at least China, when we talk about labor out migration here, come into the picture.
This is true. I'm glad that you brought that up. I mean, you do know that a lot of construction work was built by China in Serbia, but also in Montenegro. The first section of the highway in Montenegro was built by China. That's why Montenegro had around, you know, between 10 to 15% of that exposure just to China. So, I mean, the China influence is there, and it's good that I brought this up because for, let's say, for building the highway, it's a construction sector and you need construction worker, for instance. But if you don't have construction worker, then you need to import us. And this is something that is already happening in the Western Balkans. You can see it by the bare eye that foreign workers work on the construction sites. And as of last year, North Macedonia was top European country in terms of the vacancy rates in the construction sector, implying a huge demand. On the other hand, we do have a huge, I mean, this is a paper on migration. And of course, we do not analyze the causal effects, but many peoples from the Western Balkans migrated away from the region to Germany, also in construction sector. Actually, the most important sector that Western Balkan people contribute to in the Germany is, in fact, construction sector, but labor shortages are very wide in the region too, in this sector, not only other sectors that, like, for instance, healthcare sectors, which we didn't have time to talk. There is a lot of, there is a rising trend in the medical doctors moving away from the Western Balkan to Germany after the Western Balkan regulation. Well, just to demonstrate to you the vulnerabilities of this sector, the three countries of the Western Balkan performed the most poorly in the top 10 countries during the COVID times, as measured by mortality rates. So, like, the healthcare sector has huge systemic issues due to low investment, but also low number of medical doctors. So, number of medical doctors per 10,000 inhabitants in the Western Balkans is hovering between 15 to 28, depending on a country, but for instance, which is much lower than OECD in countries and much lower than in Germany, where this figure is 45 as of 2022. So, I mean, we diverge, and I pull back the topic to migration that, you know, industrial vulnerabilities exist and they could be exacerbated by migration also too.
Early on, we talked about the legacy of the war and how that created all this demand for people to seek asylum in Germany. Is there any sense that there might someday be a real push for the diaspora to go home, perhaps because of EU accession or something? Or is because all of that is so far in the future, we should see some of these migrants as really having found a new home to stay?
I'm glad you brought that question up because we found there is a huge potential for actually benefiting from the migrants. It's a really an open-end question. As Professor Herbert said, it's for the receiving end, the economic implications are positive, but for the origin countries, there could be quite mixed. And we do find, as I said, that Germany is important investor and trade partner of the Western Balkans, and these economic linkages can be further reinforced through new ways of migration. Remittances are rising. We do not really know the origin of these remittances, but the remittances are certainly rising in the region, and they can be used for household consumption, but also investment. In particular, investment could be important for given the potential to rise further their industrial and technological scale. And the last but not the least, we touch upon the reverse knowledge spillover. So to what extent this region can actually benefit from return migration. And it's really hard to argue because this is a new wave of migration and towards the Germany. And we don't really have enough data to disentangle how many people return. But however, let me touch upon the wars that you mentioned. So there was a war, there were two wars in the 90s, in Bosnia-Herzegovina and in Kosovo. And then Bosnia and Herzegovina was particularly long, 4 or 5 years. And the research already exists stating that many of these people actually returned. Only 10% of refugees who stayed in Germany, which at that time amounted to 0.8 million, so 10% only remained. But those that returned really helped the Bosnian economy and its export performance and its productivity. Why? Because they returned to exactly the same sector where they were working on in Germany. And they help them, they use this knowledge to grow the business locally while actually maintaining and nurturing the business links they had with Germany. So this is a particularly important channel which deserves to be explored. But however, we do not have enough data to see whether this new wave of migration led to that return spillovers.
Herbert, what's your take on the returns overall? I'm sure you've been tracking this over that period.
But it's pretty obvious that you have in all migrations and also here a lot of return migration, although many of this migration is pretty temporary. In Germany, they taught for all migrants within the first year, about 30% of the migrants return home. And then it declines step by step. On average, 5% of our foreign population returns home each year. And that's a point why I wonder whether net migration or the net migration potential might be exhausted, because the larger the share in the population you have, that simple algebra, the higher is it are the return migrants, and which you have to compensate by new migrations. And therefore, you somewhere move into an equilibrium where return migration equals immigration. The question is where we stand. What is the point where we do stand? And what we certainly see is, again, that the immigration figures do decline. If you have then relatively stable return migration, then you end up eventually at a zero net migration. And that is the prospect, certainly the question as well. Then if we talk about the impact of return migration, it depends all of course, how long the people stayed, whether they have acquired skills, education, work experience. And we have one interesting study which stems, which exploits the episode of the wars in former Yugoslavia, when we have seen the huge wave of asylum migration in the 1990s. And we have analyzed then the impacts of the return migration on trade and innovation. And it has substantial impact on bilateral trade in Germany. Some of my team members have published that in Review of Economics and Statistics. They found causal evidence. So return migration is important. It can increase growth. And the final remark on the structure of migration. We have a totally different structure between if we compare those people who use the Western Balkan rule compared to those who have come via the other channels. Those who came via the other channels were predominantly in the health sector, health care workers and also physicians, a very, very high share. That was the largest group. And the non-regulated access that were has also, I think, 8% in the healthcare sector. I'm not absolutely sure whether I remind the figures, but about 40% in the construction sector, which is very, very large. And therefore, I am usually suggesting that we do less regulated migration, because the regulated migration follows the demands in the German labor market, and that increases the brain drain in vulnerable sectors like the health sectors, because we do urgently need healthcare workers in Germany. And if we deregulate that, then you find something like a more healthy mix in the migrant population. And I think that is important. And I see, I also talk vis-a-vis the German government or the German Employment Agency about it. I'm pretty skeptical about their activities in attracting healthcare workers in countries which have not an excess supply. There are some countries like the Philippines or Mexico have an excess supply because they educate people above the demand, the local demand. That's a different issue. But in countries where you have severe shortages in the healthcare sectors, that's an ethical question that you do not recruit by purpose workers from there.
Thanks for that. Nina Rohr, did you see anything in the data you wanted to highlight?
Well, that's actually the issue. I would like to see the data on it, right? I mean, I think one of the recommendations we're making at the end is that a systematic collection of such information would be very interesting to have, because so far we have information about some specific episodes. So, for example, the wars in the 1990s. But in general, over the last 10 to 15 years, we do not really know, or at least the data is very hard to find, or maybe I haven't found it yet, to know who's coming back, what are the profiles, why are they coming back, to be able to know a bit more about it, and also to be able, if that is the idea, to attract them back, right? And for now, it is extremely hard because we actually don't really know who is coming back to the countries.
Yeah, brief comment on the data. We have pretty good data in Germany on those who are here, here in Germany. And there we know the employment patterns and so forth. And we also do know by linking administrative data, register data, with the employment data, by which channel they came. And then we can analyze the employment patterns and wages and so forth. We try to set up in the moment a return migration panel at our institute. And then we try to learn something about those who return. So far, we have only migration intentions, as many other studies, which is not equal to return migration. So our data on return migration is pretty poor. We do know how many people in the aggregate return if they disappear from the registers, which is also some uncertainty surrounding the validity of the data. But we do not know what kind of skill level they have and so forth, what kind of employment they had before. And therefore, we conducted a new survey, but unfortunately, we have not yet results. Yeah, only on migration intentions.
We are coming up on the end of our time, but Nina, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are, with labor market in the West of Balkans. So I will just try to also expand this nice comments by my colleagues. It is also very important for the policymakers in the West of Balkans to track people who are leaving, to track their qualification level, but also to maybe develop surveys on their qualification being developed abroad, what they do to keep the connection through the embassies with the diaspora, and basically offer data that will allow researchers, but more importantly, policymakers, to understand what is the potential of knowledge stock abroad. Why? Because these countries, to grow, they need external sources of knowledge. That is either foreign direct investments, but it can also be like their migrants who live and work abroad, but are willing to invest their knowledge back home. However, as there is a recent research by Battista et al. Stating that even return migration depends on the conditions in the origin country and how stable politically these countries are. So let me wrap this up and with another policy conclusion for policymakers in the Western Balkans. It is very important to create politically, economically, an atmosphere that is conducive to return migration. And for that, you do need to hop on the EU integration process stronger and embrace it. In particular, reform areas that tackle employment. There are actually 33 chapters of the EU accession process, of which many tackle employment, rule of law, and democracy. Montenegro last year made some progress in the area of democracy and rule of law in those reforms. But improving the institutional framework of the Western Balkans will not only speed up the EU accession process, it may increase the trust of its people in its institution and also make these countries more appealing for return migration too.
Herbert, you've been following these issues so well and so thoroughly for so long. What would you like listeners who are new to this topic to take away? What do you think is most important to understand when thinking about these issues?
Yeah, what's the most important? I think it is indeed very important to learn more about the migration and the return migration intentions. That's for me a bit of a black box, because we see something in the aggregate data. We do not know how much this is shaped by institutional barriers or whether by economic forces. It's very difficult to disentangle that, and therefore perhaps also qualitative evidence may help. Yeah, although I think there we have a lack of knowledge, and the same holds true with return migration triggered by origin country developments. Is it triggered by, let's say, problems in the labor market performance in Germany? Because as I have mentioned, if you rely on social benefits, you may lose your residence permit, and then you have to return. So that might be a kind of forced migration. Yeah. We do not know in how many cases the Hofen that is going to happen there. We also need further knowledge that our knowledge is better, whether that is binding individuals to employers and or force them to be binded to employers that may reduce their wages and their careers, yeah, these regulations. And we have to learn more about it. Yeah, superficially, it looks like a success, but there might be problems in detail, and we need perhaps a liberalization of those things. Yeah. My political conclusion is it's rather successful, at least from the German perspective and from the perspective of the migrants. That is what we do know from the surveys and from the administrative data. And I would advise that also for other EU candidates, perhaps for countries like Turkey. Yeah, that might be another candidate in for Germany. Turkey is also a very relevant country and in economic terms, pretty comparable. And that might be better than liberalize the labor market too late after enlargement. Yeah, in particular, given the high political uncertainty that we do face, whether there might be an accession at all. Therefore, I would start with the labor market liberalization, but perhaps it's much easier than accession to the European Union. That was different in the first enlargement round or the second enlargement round with Bulgaria and Romania. Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. You've been listening to The Sound of Economics from Bruegel, Brussels-based economic think tank. All of our research, including the paper we've discussed today, is available on our website, bruegel.org, and we'll also include some of Professor Herbert Brucker's research in the show notes. We've been joined today by Professor Herbert and Nina Ruhr and Nina Vojanovic. I'm your host, Rebecca Christie. Thanks so much for listening, and see you next time.